Welcome to La Liga Weekly. It's definitely not boring being a Barca fan, is it? They could barely get a team out a few months ago. Ronald Koeman sitting there looking glum, saying, well, this is how it is. Now they get four goals a game and there are forwards fighting to come off the bench. But one guy who couldn't get a game for Wolves now has everybody say, yeah, we knew he was a world-class winger. There's a guy who was being booed a couple of weeks ago who will get a statue if he re-signs. And they're weighing up whether they want Erling Haaland or to keep Luke de Jong because he scores more goals. Just think, Barca fans, only 13 games to play in La Liga before the calculators and the budget sheets come out and they figure out who can play for you again next season. I mean, Real Madrid are going to win the league, obviously, but that's, you know, that's only because no one can score past Thibaut Courtois. And where's the honour in that? Sevilla won the derby in Seville. Terry Gibson watched the match in a pub in Newcastle. Obviously, we'll find out exactly why. The other heroes of the weekend were Enes Ünal, who I don't think anybody calls the Turkish Messi, so we'll have that. Yeremy Pino, who bagged four for Villarreal, the first teenager to do so in La Liga since Santi Mina. And Atleti have finally solved their goal-scoring problems thanks to Renan Lodi. Can someone tell Diego he didn't need to sign all those forwards? Diego, didn't need to spend all that money, mate. right. So there we are, Tim. That's La Liga summed up in a minute. Tell us about why Newcastle? Why do Blythe Spartans get a mention on this week's La Liga weekly podcast?
Yes, it was a La Liga watch along party organised by La Liga UK. Keegan Pearce, who's a friend of ours and does some excellent work in the UK promoting Spanish football. So they have been having these parties where you go to a bar, you go to a pub, and the game is on. And I did one the week before in London and for the Basque Derby. And this week was asked to go up to Newcastle and watch the Sevilla Derby with people that were interested in that game in that part of the world. I must admit, I didn't expect there to be too many people there. And I was astonished. 50 people in a small room. Predominantly Betis fans, and the Blythe Spartan link is because they have an official Blythe Spartans supporters have an official Betis supporters club because both teams play in the green and white stripes. So they travelled down from Blythe Spartans down to Newcastle, which not many people say, to join in and have this event in the George Inn, which is the oldest pub in Newcastle. So it was a lovely afternoon. It was good to watch. If any of our listeners get the opportunity, they're worth going along and get together with like-minded people. That just always interesting to know why these people choose these clubs. But there's always a reason behind it, even if it's being manager of Sevilla on Championship Manager and then buying a shirt and then being in Newcastle and coming along to watch the game with Betis on a Sunday afternoon. So They're good. They're good fun. Prizes to be won and stuff like that. Quiz. It's a good event. Smashing event. So hopefully be involved in one or two more.
I once in fine days, Terry. In the past, I once got Blythe Spartans promoted to League One. So you know, one of my better achievements as a football manager. I don't get time anymore. I play every now and again, and then what a waste of your life.
Do you know what though? What surprises me is they're not part-time fans.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're all these people that go to these events, they know the players, they know the coaches, the previous managers, previous coaches, they know the form, they know the tactics.
And care.
They're fully invested into it. Yeah. And, you know, as I say, predominantly Betis fans. So when they scored at the end of the place, the room in the bar went mad and, you know, despair when they hoped there was going to be more added on time, which I agreed with them actually because I think they scored with 2 minutes of added on time left and it was a long take to take the free kick by Canales and then the celebrations of the goal. So by the time the kickoffs resumed, the 2 minutes had gone and the referee didn't add it on. So there was a few disheartened Betis fans that weren't another couple of minutes. But in general, Sevilla were the better team in the first half and had control of the game with a two-goal lead, then changed their tactics and were a bit more reserved in the second half. But talking about the game, it was an excellent first half from Sevilla. And just the type of game to get the blood flowing again. They've looked jaded in recent weeks, but a derby in front of their own fans and a glorious afternoon. I thought at one stage we're going to have a drinks break in February It was a classic Sevilla derby in terms of atmosphere, and Sevilla, you know, got back to winning ways to maintain the 6-point gap. Actually, the league this week is pretty much as it was, isn't it? The teams won at the top, a slight change at the bottom with Alaves picking up a point. So it's all pretty much as you were from before the weekend started, but some excellent talking points, to interesting talking points to refer back to over the weekend's action.
Yeah, obviously a bad one for Betis, wasn't it? Now, brief for these teams and the Europa League. Obviously, everyone has got an eye on the story that it could end up being the Seville derby in Seville for the Europa League final. Obviously, there's a long way to go yet, but they are both through. Betis got Eintracht Frankfurt, and the Sevilla West Ham is an interesting game, isn't it? Because West Ham are a good team, aren't they? You know, if anyone who doesn't watch the English football regularly, they've really turned it around. You're old mates of yours, aren't they? David Moyes and Stuart Pearce. And it'll be a fascinating game, aren't they? Because they're solid, West Ham. They're not dissimilar from Sevilla, really, in some ways.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was going to make that point. They're both teams, I wouldn't say they were negative, but they're conservative. They can be conservative, both teams. So they will be two fantastic ties. Sevilla will respect West Ham, of course, as they would any Premier League team they face in European competition. But Sevilla in this competition believe they're invincible. They're disappointed to be back in it again after being in the Champions League. But they will fancy their chances against West Ham because of their history in this competition. Likewise, West Ham, it's a great challenge. They're playing one of the teams that have the best success in European football in recent seasons. So it's a fantastic tie. Betis, scraped through in the end. I think they were fortunate in their previous game. I've forgotten who they beat with the disallowed goal in the last seconds of the game. And I couldn't see any obvious reason why it was disallowed. I think it was a slight foul. They got away with that. So a bit of luck there to maintain the narrative that we could have a severe derby in the final. But I wonder if Barcelona might have a say in that as well.
Yes, but we will. Yeah. In fact, shall we move on? We might as well do Barcelona now, might we? Because, like I said at the beginning, everything at Barca is just the mood around the place. Philip asked us a question on Twitter, isn't it? Can we now start saying that Barcelona are a top team again? Well, there were three consecutive games in which they score four. Four of the last five games, they've bagged four goals. Tremendous entertainment. And you look at the goal scorer, so Aubameyang, Dembele with a wicked finish, the mighty Luke de Jong and Memphis Depay all scored. Everyone except Ferran Torres scores for Barcelona these days. They blew Athletic Club apart, didn't they? And it was looking so exciting with so many options let's do that. Let's talk about the game, you know, and how well they played against Napoli as well.
Yes, in both games. And it's clear, it's quite simple game football. The better players you have, the more chance you have of winning games. And when you look at Barcelona's season report, it was the attacking department of the team that was lacking. And I don't want to be too harsh on what they had, because they were relying on young players that weren't, you know, probably wouldn't have seen first team football at Barcelona if the circumstances had been normal. Now, some of those young players in the last couple of seasons have flourished, Gavi, Pedri in particular, because they've been given opportunities, because of the circumstances. But it's to get two successful ones is some going. So then to stretch it, to try the likes of Abde and Ferran Jukla and Ilias came in as well, was a big ask. And you saw Barcelona playing, they didn't have a cutting edge up front. They didn't scare teams up front. So therefore, you know, opposing teams were able to be a bit more ambitious in terms of pushing players on, because they weren't worried about the threat from a Messi, Neymar, Suarez, David Villa, Thierry Henry, which Barcelona have been, you know, associated with in the past. But all of a sudden, that's turned around. And it's pure and simple. And it kind of makes a mockery of fair play to Barcelona for working so as hard as they did in the transfer window, because we hear it time and time again where people say, lazy from clubs to say, oh, you can't sign anyone in January.
Yeah.
They've blown that out of the water. I mean, to transform their team in the way that they have done with the signings that they've made, And now they're getting one or two players back from injury, then Dembele's situation is going to resolve itself one way or the other. In my opinion, he should stay. I really do believe that. Whether his agent will let him, which is a negative aspect in terms of the future of players regarding their movements in their during their career. I'm not sure the player always has the last say, which he emphatically should.
Right, so let's just pause on Dembele, because he played sensationally, didn't he? He set up his the crosses that he put in, the goal that he scored himself were sensational. He wasn't booed, was he? I was listening for any signs of booing. I didn't hear any. I do think that he's playing with extra focus. I took the mick out of him saying he was the new Mark Viduka, because Mark Viduka classically played brilliantly in the last 6 months of his contract. That is being flippant about it. But I do think that he's focused after the booing, the concentration, because I sometimes think he's a bit light. He's a bit flippant in a game, I think.
Casual.
But he hasn't been, has he, in these recent weeks? But I don't know where he goes. It's the complicated scenario still exists, isn't it? If they still want to pay him, they still want to get him 30 million a year, Barca's top up. Barca can't, they just can't go bigger and bigger and bigger with their transfer offer. A couple of really good games doesn't really change the picture. I don't think, Man City haven't signed him. They could all sign him now. Couldn't any of these teams could sign him now for the summer. Man City, all the ones with all the money, Newcastle, everyone could be putting offers in right now. None of them seem to be. So, I don't know. I guess we just have to see how he plays, don't we? To see which way the balance goes.
Yeah, I think also we shouldn't underestimate the fact that Xavi is the manager now. And from day one, Xavi is... and kept saying it, reiterating the fact that he wants him. He wants him to stay. He sees him as being, he lavished praise on him and said he was one of the best players in the world and that he wanted him to stay at Barcelona. He sees him as an important player. Now, I know money is important, but how much money? Dembele's already a wealthy man. He's probably already set up for life. You'd hope so. So by staying at Barcelona as opposed to moving somewhere else, he's still going to get paid a fortune by Barcelona. Now, we've seen Aubameyang take a drop. I know there was money paid by Arsenal to him to resolve the contract issue at Arsenal, but he took a drop in wages, which tells me that there's still a significant number of players around Europe that still see Barcelona as a major football club. And it is, and it will continue to be. It's remarkable how quick they've turned things around from the disaster that we saw. I'm not being critical of Koeman, but the players that he had, the situation that he had, losing Luis Suarez the year before, losing Lionel Messi, losing other players. So it wasn't easy for Koeman. But to see them recover as quick as they have, that we're seeing them scoring goals on a regular basis, we're seeing players play out the skin now and the confidence is back. And they look, Philip said, can we whisper it quietly? Yes, you can. There's clear evidence now that they're on back on track a lot quicker than I expected. I have to be honest. I didn't expect that this season. The transformation. I thought Xavi would have an impact just by being Xavi. Of course, he has the football knowledge and know-how to go with it. But it's his first major job in football. So we expected some sort of impact there from, first impressions that the players want to show to their manager. And that's continued now. And they've been in an excellent run of form. But if I was Dembele, I'd look around and I think, where else do you compare playing... For Barcelona, where else do you get that feeling? Now, there will be big clubs in England, but I don't know if it's any better than playing your football at Barcelona and being, respected by the manager, and the manager is Xavi. And I've always said he's a breathtaking footballer, and I agree with you. He's too casual, too flippant in possession. The easy things he doesn't always focus on. And then out of the blue, he can beat two or three players down the right, down the left, he can finish. He has the makings of being an unbelievable footballer. But it's taken time, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, when he joined Barcelona, he was on a par with Mbappe. The two of them, everyone was fighting for. Mbappe's pushed on. Dembele has an injury problems, discipline problems as well. Slower maturing as a player than Mbappe. But he still has that potential. And, if I was another major club around Europe, I'd be tempted, very tempted. But if I was Dembele, I'd look around and think, do you know what? I've got a manager that really likes me. The grass isn't always greener on the other side. It might mean more money initially, but who knows how it's going to turn out. You know, might be in my interests. It's not roughing it, staying at Barcelona, that's for sure. So, but I'm pretty sure the issue is with the agent who probably wants him to move because he'll get paid more money for a transfer as opposed to re-signing a contract to Barcelona. Even the agent will get weighed in heavily by Barcelona. So again, it comes down to how much money do you want. There's going to be a lot of money involved. But no, he was brilliant when he came on. And yeah, you're right, he is more focused. But perhaps that is down to Xavi as much as the situation.
Yeah.
It might just be Xavi has given him wings, given him that extra confidence. And for the first time, he might have a manager who really does believe in him. And, you know, he's putting an arm around his shoulder. And man management skills are important, massively important in any manager's, you know, armoury. And to get the best out of Dembele and the others. It's incredible. I mean, Luke de Jong comes on and scores another goal. Memphis Depay comes on. I mean, you said about a player that was being booed is now. Do you mean Dembele or do you mean Luke de Jong?
Yeah, I meant Dembele, but yeah.
He's going to have a statue built of him, Luke de Jong. And it's incredible the way he's suddenly burst into life. Memphis comes on, a player we've forgotten about recently, comes on, scores a good goal and plays well.
Luke de Jong's,
and Ansu Fati to come back as well.
Luke de Jong's transformation is wonderful as well, isn't it? Because he could have left.
Yeah.
He could have gone, couldn't he? And he would have been a figure of fun. That's how close it was, wouldn't it? It would have been like a Julian Forbert at Real Madrid, where everyone goes, did he play for... You know, would have been one of those.
Yeah.
Whereas he stays, and now he's suddenly banging in goals. And you know, he's an actual useful part of the team. I mean, I still think Aubameyang was a massive piece in the jigsaw. I think a proper world-class number nine. People don't normally just give them away to you, but Arsenal did. And you know, I was interacting with Arsenal fans on Twitter at the weekend, and they're adamant that they did the right thing, or loads of them are.
They're getting results at the moment, Arsenal, aren't they?
Yeah,
but he's finished against Napoli. That was awesome.
Yeah,
because there's no touch to control the ball, and it needed a touch by most strikers to control that ball, and he just puts it right in the top corner from outside. The penalty, without even thinking about it, the instinct, the quality was that. That showed me the first goal we scored against Valencia as well. You know, when he gets put through on goal, it's a decent chance, and one you'd think he's got a very good chance of scoring, and he picks out the top corner in that one as well, the near post. No, it's quite funny because as a Spurs fan, I wasn't allowed to have any opinion on Aubameyang other than he played for Arsenal. but now, as a neutral, you can see, you know, witness him and see, he's different class. So he was important goal last night against an Athletic team who weirdly, I kind of get it. I'm not saying they threw the game, but six or seven players that played in that game won't play in the second leg of the Copa del Rey semi-final against Valencia.
Mm.
We questioned, I don't know if we did it on the podcast, we spoke about Berenguer, didn't we, in the game before against Real Sociedad, picking up a yellow card in the last seconds of the game by time wasting when they were 4-0 up. Definitely trying to get booked. So that he would miss the Barcelona game, and we question the fact that why would he want to miss playing at Barcelona? It's one of the games in the calendar you look at, Real Madrid away, Barcelona away as a play. You're not going to get hundreds of opportunities to do that, and he passed that up. So kind of expected Athletic to play a weakened team. And to be fair, it wasn't until late in the game that Barcelona ran away with it.
Yeah,
and it was Barcelona had more possession, of course, and they were playing well. Pedri was sensational. He's just a lovely little footballer to watch. But it, you know, the goals came. I'm looking at the times of the goal, 73 minutes Dembele. At that stage, it was still 1-0 without Athletic pushing forward, without them looking like they would score a goal. Iñaki Williams comes on for his 221st. It's an obligation now, isn't it? Marcelino can never leave him out. Even if he's on the bench, he has to put him on at some stage. Marcelino can't be blamed for breaking that sequence of games, 221 consecutive games. It's astonishing, absolutely astonishing. And, you know, so it was a tough scoreline, actually, for Athletic. They showed their usual spirit, even with the numerous changes. But, of course, their focus is on the... Which happened a few times over the weekend. The teams have got these second legs of the Copa del Rey. Betis, maybe, in the first half, weren't at the races despite it being a derby, because they've got a very good chance of going through with a 2-1 lead playing at home against Rayo. So These are big moments in the for these four teams involved in it. There's no Barcelona, there's no Atletico, there's no Real Madrid, there's no Sevilla. The four teams in it can believe that they can win it, and it's a route to Europe for some of them, where they're not going to get it through the league position. So kind of interesting how the teams played it this weekend. But Athletic, Marcelino, you know, wasn't embarrassed to say, you know, this is what we're focusing on. But he expected his team, and he got a decent performance from his team. I think the 4-0 slightly flatter Barcelona because of the sequence of goals at the end. But now Barcelona are looking a very, very good team again. And as I say, I'm astonished with how quick they've turned things around. I made a prediction that they'd finish second behind Real Madrid. Real Madrid are doing what they do. Their form is...
Should we do Real Madrid? Yeah.
Yeah, they're not blazing teams away. They're solid. They have three outstanding players in La Liga this season. Two at the top end, and Benzema and Vinicius, who combined for the goal, and Courtois in goal. The rest of the team are doing solid work. It's unspectacular. I do see signs of tiredness, and I do wonder why Ancelotti doesn't rotate. It clearly doesn't have a lot of trust for the other players in the squad. And that's good. That could come back to bite him, I'm pretty sure. I'm seeing signs of Modric being jaded, for instance. Toni Kroos being jaded, for instance. Casemiro being jaded. So I think that Ancelotti is placing a lot of importance on La Liga. He hasn't won one. But it might be to the detriment of... I think they'll win La Liga. But this run of form that but isn't great, but they're getting the wins primarily because of those three players that I mentioned. And they were responsible for the reason why they won the game against Raya.
Yeah, I mean, Courtois... Yeah, we need to talk about Courtois, don't we? We don't talk generally about goalkeepers enough, do they? They haven't conceded a goal in four games, have they? The PSG game, La Liga games either side of PSG, and only conceded the last minute goal there after he'd made a couple of brilliant saves. There's nothing that new to say about Thibaut Courtois, so you end up not saying it, I think, sometimes, don't you? Because he's a monster of a man, isn't he? He's huge, but his agility for a man that big is incredible, isn't it? Because, you know, he was kept busy against Rayo Vallecano. You know, they won that game 1-0. He was probably... He's certainly as important as Benzema, I would say, this season.
Oh, totally. I mean, the reason it was 0-0 when Benzema scores is because of Courtois. They could have been 2-0 down by then. But I'm pleased for Courtois because right from the beginning, I was a supporter and... Yeah. And Keylor Navas is a good goalkeeper, but he isn't Courtois. Courtois was younger as well. And when they were having this issue with Keylor Navas being a darling of the media, I would make that accusation, and everybody was on his side in terms of this battle for the number one position at Real Madrid, I always said, and I stand by it, and I did say it on a number of occasions in different outlets, there was no comparison between Keylor Navas and Courtois. I really did feel that, and I could see the sense totally in Real Madrid bringing him in because he was younger than Keylor Navas. In my opinion, was the best goalkeeper than Keylor Navas, and it took far too long for Navas to be moved on. The minute he got moved on, and there was no argument about who was number one, Courtois has just got better and better and better, and he's repaid my faith in him to the fact that people just don't look as if they believe they can actually score past him, because Raya had some really good opportunities. Raya were fantastic. It was a horrible pitch. It's not the greatest stadium in La Liga. It was one of those evenings where Real Madrid are facing those conditions, those circumstances, against a team that's not winning and getting points at the moment, but full of spirit, such a hearty team. And they can play. And they made life really difficult because it was called frantic and frenetic play from Raya Vallecano, but they didn't have that composure. They carried that frantic and frenetic pace into when they were giving half-decent goal-scoring opportunities. And then at the other end of the pitch, where Real Madrid weren't frantic and frenetic, they were competing and it was a solid game. It was an even affair. That minute you need composure in the final third, I'm sure I've seen that goal about six times this season, where someone is tapping the ball into an empty net after picking out the right pass. This time it was Vinicius. I'm sure I've seen him do that before. I've seen Benzema tee up Vinicius. I've seen Modric tee up Benzema and Vinicius in similar circumstances. But just having that composure, you know, to slow things down at the right time and just to the goal was created, beautiful goal. And Benzema, it's a real tool of his that we don't talk about enough, that he's great. He's, and his teammates, there's an understanding. When he drops off in this situation, he was just outside the penalty area. He drops off, he pops the ball off, and he's gone. And it's impossible to mark him because you're not marking a standing still person where you can put your arm across, you can touch him, you can feel him. Once he goes off and knocks it off and spins and runs in behind, his movement is brilliant. And also the recognition of his teammates in that they know what he's doing. So sometimes he does it on the halfway line. He'll get the ball under control, he'll knock it off. It goes in behind to Vinicius or Asensio, whoever's playing, and Benzema is on the move. And invariably gets on the end of the cross or the pass in the penalty area. It's something that teams have to, I'm really surprised they're not aware of it. Pape Sis could have done better on the goal. He's with Benzema. When Benzema pops it off, he stands still and Benzema's gone. Then it's a problem with the two centre-backs and they haven't got a chance to pick him up. And then he's tapping into an empty net.
Should more forwards play like that then? Is that the way? Because we have a false nine, don't we, as the concept now, where you don't, you're not standing there being marked. I'm just thinking lower down, I'm thinking of kids and stuff. I can imagine if you're the centre-forward, and you run away from the obvious goal-scoring position. Everyone shouting at you, saying, no, get back in there, get back in there. But it's a fair point, isn't it? You don't need to be in there all the time, do you? Because as long as you get back in there at the moment that the ball is likely to arrive, it's a way to play, isn't it? It's quite a clever way to play, isn't it?
Very, very. I mean, he scored a volley recently where he was involved in the build-up on the halfway line. Also, then you've got to have the next move is the ball in behind to one of the wide players. Otherwise, if he drops short as a centre forward, get the ball, lay it off, and it doesn't go in behind, then you're probably looking at getting it again and laying it off again or turning yourself and making a run from the halfway line. But with Benzema, the whole team knows exactly when he drops off short, defenders can't go through the back of him. And he's got an outstanding first touch, great control. So he can pop it into his body, he holds it up, knocks it off, then he turns and runs. But it's important that the next pass, whether it's from Modric, Kroos, Casemiro, into the wide players, means that then Real Madrid are breaking forward at such speed. And how do you stop someone who's running at top speed in certain directions? He's probably dragging you away to a position that's false to start with, and then he'll run across you, or he'll take you to the near post and pull off to the far post. We see him run and then stop dead, and then for the cut back, and he finishes those. So it's really an important asset that Real Madrid have, and they use it to the fullest. So it was the only time he did it in this game. I mean, other times he knocked the ball off, but it didn't go in behind. But this time, around the edge of the penalty area, he pops it off, goes on the run, and Vinicius, it's a smashing ball by Vinicius. He could have shot himself, but he knows that Benzema has spun, and he's going to be in behind, and he's there for the tapping. So Real Madrid, you know, they're going along nicely in terms of results. They're grinding out results down to the fact that they have the two of the outstanding strikers in the league. There is another one that's particularly outstanding at the moment. We'll speak about in a bit. And the best goalkeeper in the world at the moment, because teams are just losing faith in the fact that they can't seem to score against Courtois. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how tall he is. But with that arm reach as well. And as you said, the agility to get down low and his reflexes. He's got better in possession when he's dealing with the ball at his feet. And he's just so authoritative in goal for Real Madrid. He's a sensational goal. He's got everything you want in a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Absolutely everything. He gets a heavy press as well, doesn't he, in this country, in the UK, because of the way he left Chelsea. Chelsea supporters are not particularly happy with how he left the club. He doesn't get a good press in this country. He gets grudging praise, even in the Champions League games. If he's excelled, they grudgingly give him a little bit of credit. But it's just weird how sometimes players, that's how it happens. Instead of giving a proper account of how he's playing and his importance to Real Madrid, there's always a narrative that, you know, he's called certain names and not... didn't particularly endear himself to the UK press, and it took a while to get the Spanish press on his side. Now, to the extent they are actually talking about him, aren't they? Because in the past, even though he's playing well, didn't say much, but it's so blatantly obvious now how important he is to Real Madrid.
Yeah. Right. And let's crack on. Let's do, where should we go next? Should we do Atleti next? And the La Liga's top goal scoring machine at the moment, Renan Lodi. So they've got obviously the Champions League game against Manchester United. We need to reflect on it as well. So the doom, I mean, that game very much in the balance, but the doom and gloom of a couple of weeks ago after that Levante defeat, and we were thinking, dear me, where are they going with this? Solid 2-0 win against Celta Vigo, and it's not a long-term solution, is it? Renan Lodi is a... to be the goal scorer, who knows? Yeah, go on.
No, I mean, he's up against Carrasco. Yeah. I think Carrasco is one of their best players.
Yeah.
So Carrasco probably is still a better option in that left wing back role. But with Renan Lodi, it's interesting because I've seen the attributes, and I think we can all agree, he hasn't been the best defender. Mm. But he's shown signs that he can attack. His final cross and final attempt at goal, you could be critical and say he's been lacking confidence. I think that's been the fact, because since he's been at the club, he's never been the favoured choice of Simeone. He's in and he's out. He's, you know, not... I don't think we'd ever call him... he's ever been a first choice left back or left wing back. And at times the crowd have got on his back a little bit when he puts a cross in behind and it goes behind the goal. Stuff like that. But there have been attributes where you think his athleticism and he's full of energy. So the left wing back role, I think, is clearly his best position. It's interesting that Sassuolo, they went to the 1-3-0, got their first clean sheet away from home. They played a 4-4-2. Then against United, they go back to the three, and they've gone back to the three again this week. So I was critical of chopping and changing the tactical system week in, week out. But I guess if you keep it to two systems, you've got a chance. And some games, three will be, you know, a better option than a back four. But I think Renan Lodi, both his goals were excellent. I mean, technically, they were great. I mean, Hugo Mayo should have done better with blocking the first one. There's a slight deflection, but if he sticks his leg out properly, he gets a proper block. And so it's hard to blame the goalkeeper. And the second one, he finishes off really well first time. A hint of maybe he thought he was offside and just lashed it in, expecting the flag to go up, but it wasn't. And it was the second goal for Atletico that wrapped the game up. So I do see... in both games, though, from Atletico, they were excellent in the first half, particularly against United. But they didn't have enough attempts on goal. That was their only downfall. I mean, they had one that hit the bar in the first half. Then Griezmann hits the bar, but I think he might have been offside in the second half. They scored the goal. Fantastic goal from Joao Felix. Great delivery into the box. So they played really well. But the obvious sign for me is they're working harder. And I was critical of Koke. I don't think Koke is capable of that, maintaining that work rate that we've seen in the two impressive performances from... clearly wouldn't be my first choice midfield. But they are doing a fantastic job. Kondogbia was immense. You know, we've seen him in the past. We know he can play. We know the job he can do. But at Atletico, he's been rotating between being one of the centre-backs and playing in midfield and playing here, there and everywhere. But against United, he was immense. He picked up the injury against Celta, which is going to be a blow. So, but Hector Herrera probably isn't on the list of first-choice midfield players for most Atletico supporters. But the work he's done, he gets out of the pitch, he closes down, he's got good quality on the ball. The system and those midfield players have given real platform to be similar to what we expect from Atletico Madrid. And most importantly, they're all working harder. They've stepped up their game. The Llorente game they drew a line. You know, up until then, it was, are we this, are we that, you know. But now they are a team that are determined to keep clean sheets. And they were able to do that to two games on the trot in the league. A poor goal to concede against United, I have to be honest. A couple of mistakes there. For the first time in the game, there was no pressure on the ball in midfield. And then Reinildo slips, and Oblak has to be culpable for getting beat by a finish from Malanga that wasn't powerful, but left too much of a goal to aim at, and took up a weird position. But there are signs of Blake's playing better as well. So a solid win from Atletico, and looking more like we expect from Atletico Madrid.
Yeah. Villarreal are looking hot as well, aren't they? 5-1 against Espanyol with Jeremy Pino banging in four goals. It was slightly disappointing when the stat came back. It was like, who was the last player to score for? Santi Mina. I mean, he's a good, solid striker, Santi Mina, but he didn't exactly go on to be the world beater that obviously Jeremy Pino, we sort of hope might be. I sort of hesitate to say how good is he, because he's a kid, isn't he? And he's still making his way in the game. So how good are Villarreal at the moment?
They're good, and he's very good.
Yeah,
I think he's a super talented youngster. Found life a bit difficult this year, like burst onto the scene last season as an 18-year-old, and has found it hard to get a position in the team this year. But his goals, as an example to anyone who's going through a bit of a dodgy patch in front of goal, he gets the first half hat trick. All three of them combined total are probably 18 yards out. Hmm. You know, 6 yards, 6 yards, 6 yards, all three goals.
Yeah.
And it's just get yourself in that position as much as you possibly can. He did it. I mean, he did it, scored again in the second half as well. Boulardier gets one. Espanyol are struggling at the moment. I think they have to be careful that they don't get dragged into the relegation battle. 8-point cushion at the moment, but that can soon be turned around. But no, Villarreal, with Gerard Moreno missing to be scoring as many goals as they've done in recent weeks, they're playing well, full of confidence. Deserve, you know, to certainly be tough for them going to Juventus, but that game's still in the balance as well, mm-hmm. with the 1-1 scoreline from the first leg, and they can turn that over. No, they're playing really well at the moment, Villarreal. And Pino is a super talented teenager.
Right, let's rattle through another few. So you hinted, Terry, at a striker who's banging in the goals. As I say, the Turkish Messi, as we now have to refer to him. Enes Ünal, what is it, 13 in 15 games. He scored doubles in three of his last four games. He lashed one in from a wide position. And because he saw, I agree, Pete Jensen was commentating, wasn't he? And the keeper's cheating is an odd word, isn't it? But he starts thinking, I'll creep out for the cross, doesn't he? And then he sort of lashes it in. So explain, so 2-2 draw, Getafe 2, Alaves 2, which is obviously the most important thing. But yeah, explain Enes Ünal's transformation.
I can't. I mean, he's a player I've always liked.
Yeah.
And he's 24 now, so he's still relatively young. He's a player I've always liked. But if you look at, in my scouting position, you look at what are his attributes? Could he do this? Can he do that? He can't do this. He can't do that. And I've always looked at him and thought, he's good in the air. He's tall. He's strong. Got a good first touch. And he's pretty quick for a big guy as well. And it was just that the one thing that was lacking was, as he got the goal-scoring instinct. He works hard, got good attitude, and he's showing us now, because of the confidence he's got, that at 24, by playing on a regular basis, for the first time in his career, he's a first-choice striker. First time in his career, he's probably at the total faith of the manager. Obviously, why? Because he's banging in goals left, right, and centre. And he's flourishing as a player. So if you look at all those attributes he's got, and now he's clearly shown he's capable of that goal-scoring instinct, getting in the right position at the right time. It's incredible. He didn't score until week 11. Hmm. So, you're looking at where we are now in the season. For him to have turned up with 13 goals in his last 15 appearances in a team that's, you know, they create more chances than they did at the start of the season. When he scored, it was week 11. That was Getafe's fourth goal of the season. So from week 11 to where we are now, to score 13 in 15, is incredible turnaround. Excellent performance from Getafe again. Alaves were improved. We'll feel, you know, hard done by that they didn't get 3 points by playing against the 10-men Getafe for a considerable amount of the game. Cuenca getting a red card in the first half. And great spirit shown by Getafe. And they have trust in Enes Ünal that, you know, if we're anywhere near getting something from a game, he might be the player that pops up with a goal or two. And it was, I agree with the second one. It was the nature of how he hit it that suggested to me it wasn't a cross. Mm. You know, he hit it with too much power for it to be a cross. And it wasn't, I don't think, a miss-hit cross that went in over the goalkeeper's head. I think he actually genuinely saw the keeper off his line, and such is his confidence now. We talk about confidence with strikers. It's amazing, trust me, how much confidence makes difference it makes in a player, particularly as a goal scorer, that you just think you're going to score every time you get a chance, every time you take on the chance, it's going to be in the back of the net. You completely transform. So long may it continue for Enes Ünal, but 13 in 15 is incredible stats. Playing for Getafe, who are still on the fringes of a relegation battle. I think they'll be all right because they're playing well and they've got an outstanding goal scorer. But in general, the team are playing well. A good point by Getafe, and we're fighting to get the winner as well. The only team that are going to win it. And Mendilibar admitted that as well, that his team were under pressure against 10 men and they did well to hang on for the point. So a point gain for both. Probably does Getafe more good than Alaves, or it does edge Alaves closer to the teams above them.
Let's just quickly do Real Sociedad 1, Osasuna 0. They needed it, didn't they, Real Sociedad, after a grim few days. They lost in the Europa League, got hammered, obviously, in the end in the Basque derby the previous week. So it was an important one, wasn't it? A scrambled goal by Elostondo.
Yeah, I mean, it's we've heaped praise on Real Sociedad throughout the year, rightly so. But I think in recent weeks, they've failed miserably. And it's the question, just bottom line, they've got to pull their finger out and do better because they've still got a chance of top four, got a chance of the Europa League positions. And I think they should be, doing better. So some young players brought into the squad this time. Ander Martin, a 21-year-old winger, Naiz Juhara, 22-year-old winger, John Pacheco, 21, played at centre-back, and Yaramendi back after 9 months missing through injury. So a little bit of a change, a little bit of a shift up in terms of the team selection from Alguacil. And it worked. I mean, but they still rely on a centre-back scoring a goal. So I think they have to work harder and get back to winning ways. I'm not sure they're going to be prolific at all this season, but their ability around the rest of the pitch and their determination should hold them in good stead. And now nothing else left to play for. They've just got to go for it in La Liga.
A huge game tonight at the bottom, isn't there? Granada and Cadiz, who are both in the battle. So big games this weekend. Obviously, Levante, Terry. Let's talk about them because not just us writing them off. The manager sounded like he was writing them off, didn't they? And now it's 7 points from 3 games, a 3-0 win over Elche, finished with 10 men, but they didn't lose the game because of the sending off, did they? They lost the game because Levante is suddenly transformed, and it's extraordinary, isn't it? It's almost like a psychological aspect of it, which almost might be thinking it's done for now. We've got no chance. We might as well relax and enjoy and play, maybe.
Yeah, well, this is the Levante that we should have been seeing all season, is it? Every time we see them play, you think they're good players. They're a bit flimsy at the back, but they've got good midfield players. They've got good attacking players, and kind of when you look at this result, it was a tough game for them. Elche were a better team until Morales scored. And then the confidence gave, the first goal gave Levante a boost. And from then on, it wasn't just the win. It was they played really well and they look a decent team. And you look upon it and you're thinking, right, they're 6 points adrift, I think, in the table.
From survival, yeah.
And you're thinking, well, if they continue to play like that, they could win half their games. And where does that leave them? This isn't a rubbish team that don't score goals, that don't you don't think that. I look at them, I still think in many games they've lost, they've been quite impressive, but they haven't got a win, they haven't got points. So it's not out of the question they could win half their games remaining and somehow drag themselves out of it. It would be an unbelievable escape if they were to do it. It really would. But it's not beyond the realms of possibility that it is doable. I mean, it's going to be tough, I admit. But I could see them winning what they got left. 12 games left. If they were able to win 5 or 6 games, that points total might be enough.
Yeah.
And is it doable that they can win half their games? The Levante that we've seen in the past and the Levante we've seen in the last couple of weeks, I would suggest it is possible that they could add the points to their total and get if they win half their games, they get to 33 points, 34 points, something like that. That might be enough.
I'm sharing now on screen for the Patreons, not for everybody else, patreon.com/LTEL. So this is a league table. I'm sharing FB Ref, which is a website I like. You get free stats on it, basically. Most of the, if you want detailed stats, normally you've got to pay for it. But I think it's probably the best free stats site. So that's Levante there. And what's, I think, telling, Terry, that's the XG. Some people don't like XG, but, it's worth looking at. put it in the XG order. So goals which they should have scored, maybe if basically the strikers have been doing a better job. Lavantius, where are they? Seventh? They're massively up there. Just, you know, wasted opportunities throughout the course of the season, really. Whereas Getafe actually would be bottom of that. So basically, they're making the most of their opportunities. And then the XG goal difference, basically, you know, if it wasn't just down to what you do in the penalty area, that's how the table would be. It would be Real Madrid top, Barcelona, Villarreal, Atletico, and Levante, again, a mid-table. But in reality, they're 20th. You know, it's which I think backs up what you're saying. That they have good players. They've just made a mess of so many games that in which they've played this season.
Yeah, at both ends of the pitch, I think they've been poor defensively. And a lot of that is down to individual mistakes. Maybe three managers in a season doesn't help their organisation at the back. But and perhaps the strikers clearly haven't been taking the chances that have come their way, but they did it at the weekend against a decent Elche team. They run away with it in the end. As I say, after the first goal, they were very strong and looked a good team. So if they were to get to 33, 34 points, well, winning half of their games, then that gives them a chance of salvation. Massive games, you said, Monday night in that game with the two teams that are still massively involved in the relegation situation. Granada at home to Cadiz. Granada haven't been winning games. Cadiz have shown signs of improvement. So that's going to tell us something tonight, whether Granada are really going to be dragged into the relegation situation. Mallorca slipping down the table as well. Luis Garcia Plaza actually does need to calm down a touch, doesn't he? Getting all worked up over a foul on the halfway line, getting himself sent off. It was a fractious match. Teams go into games against Valencia now just expecting a punch up, and it doesn't exist. I mean, Valencia are competitive and aggressive, and teams lose their focus on actually getting the ball down and playing and finding a way to score what has been quite an easy defence to score against. They get wound up with the situation, and Paulista back, been much missed by Valencia, and scores an unbelievable goal to give them the win at Mallorca. So Mallorca still very, very much in trouble. And Granada, Cadiz, as we said, they're playing Monday evening, they're very much in trouble. And Levante will look upon those others that, you know, above them and think, for the first time probably, actually, let's have a go. You know, let's play like we can. Let's play like we do. Kind of got nothing to lose because they've been written off by everybody, including their own manager. And it just might have been an astonishing turnaround if they were to do it. Not saying they will, but there's a chance.
So you describe Gabriel Paulista's goal, Terry, as unbelievable. And yet, La Liga stats tell us it's 2.7% chance of him scoring. Well, are you sure? I admit I don't understand all of the data that goes into XG, but I believe that there are clever people who've put it together. And so I trust it enough to take interest in it. Those La Liga, honestly, they're just 2.3. Oh, yeah, I'll put it until I'm convinced otherwise.
The interview afterwards, we said it's one of the best goals he's scored. Do me a favour. Clearly the best goal he's scored. Most of his goals, he does nick a goal, but they'll come from set pieces and there'll be headers from a corner or a free kick or a knockdown in the box. He steps up onto this one, controls its clearance. It's not terrible clearance. 25 yards, 30 yards out as a touch. Hits it with a sledgehammer with the laces.
Yeah,
and it has a bit of curl on it. It curls right into the top corner. Spectacular goal, spectacular strike. Really early in the game as well. I think he's missed 13 games, and they have missed him. I expected him to have an impact defensively, but after 4 minutes, as I say, took a sledgehammer to the game, gave Valencia the lead. The back five of Valencia then stayed in place. They weren't very ambitious. Some changes made by Bordalas because of their cup match, but they were able to hold on quite comfortably, I would suggest, despite Mallorca having a lot more of the ball, more attempts on goal, 23 shots, but a lot of those were blocked. And I think 23 shots, three on target. A lot were blocked, a lot were wayward. So Mallorca, they're going to be in the thick of it, I think, until the very end of the season.
It smacked of, I score goals like that around my other friend's house that you don't know. I'm always banging them in from 30 yards there. Right, I think that's all the game's done. We'll see how Granada Cadiz turns out tonight. We'll be back with the Patreons again soon. If you've made it this far, you might as well become a Patreon and listen to us again. That would make sense, wouldn't it? So
I guess we do a Copa del Rey roundup as well, can't we?
Yes. Big games. At the end of the week, huge games for these clubs involved, of course. Yeah. Yeah. So we will be back with the Patreons and with any questions that you want to fire at us as well later in the week. Enjoy your football this week, everybody. Terry, have a good week and we'll see everybody soon.